It's the story of an American held in a dark Venezuelan prison.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
I'm Becky Bruce. I spent a year working on Hope in Darkness, which now has more than 2 million downloads. Find it on KSLpodcast.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Thank you for tuning in to First Lady and Friends. Wanted to do a real quick shout out for our Show Up for Service initiative. Please remember to go to showuputah.org for more information and to do the 1-2-3 challenge. Today on the podcast, we had an incredible conversation with Pat Jones of the Women's Leadership Institute. She is an incredible leader in the state, and I can't wait to have you join in the conversation. Let's go. Welcome back to a new season of First Lady and Friends. This is very exciting. We took a little break Christmas time, and we've been off for a few weeks. But we are thrilled to have with us today the one and only Pat Jones. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Abby. There actually are many of us, I'm finding out, because I'm getting mail from a lot of them.
But the one we know and love, Pat, it's you are someone that I think many of us look up to, including myself and my husband. And we've just become dear friends in the last several years. And so we're just thrilled to have you here. But there's a lot of people who know you and know who you are and know a little bit about you, but I would love to kind of go way back and talk about your childhood, where you grew up, a little bit about your family and your parents, and maybe a little bit about your education journey.
Oh, sure. Well, I was a shy child. My mother said I was quiet and the peacemaker, which I think I've changed a little bit since then. So I don't know if that was truly me or if she was just pigeonholing me, but I was the fourth of five children. My dad was worked as a railroad engineer, and my mother was a career woman. And she, I think, pretty well ran Industrial Supply at that time. My mother's still living. She'll be 100 in August.
Oh, that's amazing.
And having her, you know, go to work in the morning and come back, I think made all of us very independent. And I think she's always wondered, was that the right thing to do? And, you know, the guilt thing that a lot of moms go through, which I've been through too. And, you know, of course, I think it does help. I think it's the quality of time that they spend with you, not necessarily the quantity. There were some things that we had to give up, but she was just a great mom. And my dad was too. They were very loving. So I have two older brothers and an older sister and a younger brother. One lives here, but they all live in other states, which is kind of the way things go. But I was very much a tomboy growing up. I grew up in Holiday, but I loved to play baseball. And in those days, in fact, this is a memory I have. Third grade, you know how they would divide up, the boys would divide up in the class and they would pick someone to be on their team to go out to play recess. And they would always pick me. I'd be the only girl that they would pick because I was a fast runner. And I was, you know, just delighted to be part of it. And then after school, they would go to the Little League ballpark. And I just remember this so well. Is they would play baseball and I would have my hands clutched through those chain link fence at watching these very boys that I played with, you know, during the day, and not even thinking that, you know, that I should be out there with them. It just wasn't part of it. That was in, you know, the late 50s. So way before Title IX. Yep. And so I think because of that experience, and there were more than that, I was so happy when my daughters, I have two daughters, could play high school basketball. And it just meant so much more to me because they had opportunities that I didn't have. They really didn't have much for girls,
yeah. You
know, in my day.
Yeah.
So I think that was kind of the early shades of, you know, really caring about women having more opportunities. And there is a drive inside me. And
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, that's fascinating. And I was blessed to be able to play high school sports, and I really love that. But I remember my mom and my, you know, those that came before me too as well, saying we just didn't have those opportunities. I think it's beautiful that you saw that and are now, you know, making sure that opportunities for those coming behind you are there, which is really cool that you've made that your kind of your mission.
Yes, it was. And the other memory I have just now was in high school. You know, I went to Olympus High School. Our rival was Skyline High School, and we wanted to have a girls' football team, and because we wanted to play Skyline. And so I remember a friend of mine, Sherry, and I went in to see the principal and said, we would like to start a girls' football team. We want to play Skyline. And his words were, well, you can have a football game if you want. You won't have coaches. You won't have equipment. You know, if you want to just choose when the boys are not out there, if you want to go and have a game, that's totally up to you. So we did. We had a tackle football game. We had a broken clavicle and, a couple of broken bones with the women. But so I think I had this kind of sense of needing equality from a much younger age than now. And so I think that's one reason the work that I do now is so incredibly important to me. And I think it's incredibly important to a lot of people.
Absolutely. I have I'm thinking about my high school experience too. And I loved football. My dad played at Weber State a little bit. And my grandpa, like, that's all we did. We watched football. We played football. We, you know, out in the field when I'm growing up, like when they would cut the alfalfa, that's when we'd go out and we'd play football in the field. And my dad wanted a football team. And so he wanted 11 kids. So he got 10 kids and 8 girls. So
there you go.
So we were all athletic because that's what we grew up doing. We just thought that was part of what we did. And I remember playing basketball in high school and my friend, I talked to her about that. I think women should have an NBA league. And this is way before the WNBA. And I remember my friend making a little logo of women's. It was a WNBA. That's what we did. So,
sports are really a great entree into business. Mm-hmm. You know, I did a paper on this when I was at the university, and you know, I interviewed all of these women who were really active in sports and found that was really important to them being accepted. And I remember one woman telling me she had just moved here and worked for a large company. And she says, you know, it was kind of hard breaking in here. But she said, once I did, she said, on my first day, I became the head of the office pool when we were betting on the Super Bowl, and I was immediately accepted. And from that time forward, it was like, you know, clear sailing for her. She was accepted. And so I do feel that if, you know, women and men, that, you know, if we can learn that. And the other thing that we do in our Women's Leadership Institute is we have a golf clinic and tournament, because golf is the language of business, and recognizing that, helping women understand the importance of that in elevating women is another aspect of that.
Yeah, because that's part that you can feel a little left out. And frankly, the reason I started playing golf was because my husband would say, I'm going to go play golf with my law school buddies. And at the time, I had we had babies. We had little ones. And I said, the heck you are. I'm coming with you.
So I love
that,
you're
not going to leave me home with kids while you go play. And so I started playing golf, and Spencer and I, from the time we both started playing golf, we've always done it together. And it's been kind of one of those things. And so I love that you're encouraging women to be part of that. Cause I think, I mean, as a mother, I felt that way. And as a wife, but I think I can see in business where, okay, it's the, you know, the boys club, and they're going out to do these business, and they're talking about these things, and they're making those relationships, they're developing those relationships on the golf course. And if you're not a part of that, you're not a part of that.
Exactly.
And so I think that's important.
Absolutely. And, you know, I encourage men to at least invite women. So it's usually not intentional. Women are not intentionally left out. It's just that we don't think about it. And oftentimes men either assume that, you know, she has to go home after work and you know, take care of things. But that's changing.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm proud to say that last year we were selected as the exclusive charity partner of the LPGA Symetra Tour.
No kidding.
And so we have that relationship for two more years now. And so I was able to take part in a pro-am last April. And I'm a terrible golfer. I mean,
I think most people are. I mean, golf is an extremely frustrating sport.
That's what I'm learning.
Right. If you played sports. I mean, so if I had played as much basketball as I have spent time playing golf, I would be an incredible basketball player right now.
Well, you probably are.
But I just think that golf is frustrating. But I think that's what women have to understand is that you go and we've played on these tournaments and men are equally terrible.
They are. I have learned that too. I've learned that too.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit about your education. So you went to Olympus and then what?
I graduated from the University of Utah, but I went a little bit later because, you know, my husband Dan and I started a business in 1980. He was a professor at Utah State and we moved down in 1980 and he was going to go be a consultant with a couple of other people in research. And I had worked a little bit in that business and I encouraged him that we should start our own company. And so we did. And that was in 1980 and it grew. There were just the two of us at the beginning and it grew and kept growing. And so he and I worked together for about 40 years. And wow. And so that was 80 to, we sold it in 2010. So I guess that's 30 years. But I stayed on for 5 more years at the Cicero Group and with an employment contract. So I was in the research business for a lot of years. I focused more on the qualitative research. So I traveled all over conducting focus groups and one-on-one interviews, but I did some quantitative too. And met with companies. And honestly, I have researched everything from ice cream, why women buy ice cream, certain kinds, to automobile tires, to big, heavy equipment, manufacturing, just about every topic you can think of. So I know a little bit about a lot of different things, which makes me kind of dangerous. So, you know, at the same time, and so I graduated from the University of Utah, but a little bit later I finished. I mean, I would take classes along the way, but I finished a little bit later, which I think helped me because I had started a business and been a principal at a business. I was president of Dan Jones & Associates for many years. We had great people around us that helped us succeed, and it was really a great experience. I loved that profession.
Mm. So then did you already have children when you were going to school?
Yes, I did.
And so you were working, going to school, you have children, you're parenting, doing the whole thing.
Yes,
so
I was working full time. Well, and I did an internship here at KSL in the middle of the winter when I had young children.
Wow.
Which was interesting. But I really did enjoy the school, I think more so than if I had finished earlier. So, and I think people looked to me, I was always dressed kind of more professionally than they were, which made me feel a little embarrassed, but I had to go right to work after. And so I think they looked at me a little differently, but it was actually a really good thing for me. Yeah. So I think it doesn't matter when you go, it's that you go.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And education means many different things.
It sure does.
And your education is in your entrepreneurship had to be, you know, invaluable to what you're doing. So I want to continue this conversation when we come right back.
2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
There's desperation and anguish.
More than 80,000 Afghans have since arrived in America. But this story is still unfolding. I'm Andrea Smartin. In my new podcast, Stranger Becomes Neighbor, we'll find out what happens to these new arrivals in our communities. Who would help our newest neighbors? Follow us at kslpodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
We're back here with Pat Jones, and you were talking about starting a business with your husband. First of all, I know there's a lot of couples that don't think that they could work together all those years. So how was that? You and your husband, I mean, so basically you were the impetus for it starting this company. So it probably should have your name on it.
Dan had the experience in the name, so because he had been a media consultant, political consultant for a while. But as far as the market research part, that's really where we got most of our work was not political. It was market research. It was like 80%. And that was very interesting. But Dan did more of the political part and I did more of the marketing part.
Okay.
And so, I mean, just as an example, I talked about ice cream for a minute, but I'll never forget this in focus groups. Well, they had done some surveys to find out what kind of ice cream moms would buy. And they would buy these big tubs of ice cream, right? You probably have done that. Yeah. Most moms have. And, you know, put that in. So that they wanted to explore that a little bit. So they did some focus groups of that. And I asked, you know, some certain questions. And there's certain ways to get the real answer, which in this case did. But what I found is that moms, yes, they buy those big tubs of ice cream. But guess what else they buy? Really expensive Ben and Jerry's little ones and hide them under the rest of the frozen goods. And then when the kids are in bed, they and you know what was weird when they started talking about this, because you have to probe and really get to the real answer. I'm thinking, oh my gosh, I do that. And like everybody else and all the other women that were there, it's like, oh, you do that too? I thought I was the only one. But that's the beauty of qualitative research. If you do it right, you really find out the real answers about why people do it. So I really loved that. And I, like I said, I went all over the country quite a bit, you know, and conducted research to find out what are the messages people need to hear. We did a lot of public service things, like how to get people to stop smoking, you know, those sorts of things. We did a lot of research. One of the things, I was talking to someone today from UTA, and I said, yeah, I helped name tracks in our focus groups. They had different names, and that was the one that prevailed. And, you know, things like this that you still see out there when you're driving down freeways and things, you kind of see, oh, yeah, I remember that, or, you know, so... Anyway, that was a great career, and I love that. And then while I was in that career, I was encouraged to run for political office in 1999. So I never thought I'd run for office. And this is usually how women do decide to run, is they are tapped on the shoulder. And I think that's changing, by the way, which is great. But I was really encouraged to run my first time, and I thought, I had worked with just about all of the governors before that, and governors, senators, U.S. senators, congressmen, and did their focus groups for them, you know. And so I always enjoyed that, and I liked that side of the mirror a little better. So when I was encouraged to run, it was actually by Jan Graham, who was our then attorney general, that sent me some information that I thought would be, you know, I kind of wanted a little better representation than I had. I had no idea. I wasn't really paying attention like I should. And she called me every day for 2 weeks and said, you've got to run. You've got to run. So finally, I just said yes, just to get her off my back. But I have to say that was the best decision, one of the very best decisions of my life, is to run for political office. Because as you think about not winning necessarily, although that helps and everybody likes to win, but running for office requires you to hone skills that you probably wouldn't hone. Number one, you have to learn to speak in public, which a lot of people are frightened to do, including myself. Number two, writing. You have to know how to write. You have to be able to communicate in written language. problem solving. Think about that in politics. Critical thinking, finding solutions to things. Persuasion. You think about, and I could go on and on, but you think about the skills that are required and are honed and are sharpened when you're not just winning, but running for office, really help you at the workplace. They help you at home. They help you in relationships. And this gets lost on a lot of people. They see the ugliness or the, you know, especially women. A lot of women just are not interested in that. But we need women to be at the table. If we really want to have a more balanced approach to policies and how we spend money, we need to have more women participating. And so this is one reason why the Women's Leadership Institute, when I first was asked to run the Women's Leadership Institute, which was 7 years ago, we're starting our eighth year now, our mission that was given to me by some of our key business leaders was to elevate the stature of women's leadership in business and in politics. And realizing that we have to have that influence of people that spend a lot of time in doctor's offices, that spend a lot of time in school settings. And I just noticed, especially when I was in the Senate, I served in the House for 6 years, in the Senate for 8 years. And I noticed, especially in the Senate, oftentimes I was the only woman on a committee. Mm-hmm. And they would discuss things that I knew quite a bit about, and they didn't. Can I just say that?
Yeah.
And just the lack of another perspective. And sometimes when you're the only woman, I see this in business now. It's so important to have more than one. You need at least 30% women in a committee and so forth. You need that influence, and women are more able to share their experiences when there are more of us. Would you say
no,
that's true?
That's absolutely true, and I think that all the data bears that out. I think I think better decision making happens, and I love that you were talking about these skills that it takes, that you learn when you run and when you're serving in these leadership positions, because they're actually the skills that we've been talking about with our emotional intelligence skills that we're trying to make sure that our children have in education, which I think is amazing.
You know, there's the Zenger Folkman Group out of Orem that are well known internationally as leadership consultants. And they did an amazing study of 60,000 360s. So it's a huge sample. And they measured 15 competencies. Mm-hmm. And Jack Zenger was on my board for a while, and he's just an awesome person. But he let me share this. Women outperformed men on 12 of the 15 and tied men on 2 of them. And so when you're looking at skills that are brought to the table in the workplace, it wasn't by a large margin, but nevertheless, women are really good for instance, really good at sales, mm-hmm. really good. Why? I learned this in my research career, that people tend to trust women more. If you're selling an automobile, why don't we have more female sales women that sell us automobiles? They do really well, by the way, when you have them. You think about those very male-dominated kind of professions. How do we get more women in there? If you want your numbers to grow and your ROI to improve and your ability to attract and retain talent to improve, and you want your employees to be happier, you hire more women.
That's incredible, and that's an incredible study, because again, we're fighting this sort of weird political moment. Well, we're fighting about everything now, which is really sad,
right?
But the important skills that we need to teach, especially young girls early, mm-hmm. have to be those critical thinking skills, have to be those, you know, self-management skills, and these things that are going to make their, you know, their employers and the companies that they work for exponentially better.
Yep. This is why I love what I'm doing now. And I really thought I was retiring in 7 years ago. I was 65 at the time. I was leaving the Senate. We'd sold our company, and I really thought I was retiring. And when I was asked to run the Women's Leadership Institute, which it just completely matched what my interests and passions were.
Yeah.
And I would have to say this has been one of the most rewarding experiences that I've had.
Let's talk a little bit more. Let's dive into the Women's Leadership Institute. It's my husband, Spencer's been on your board for a while now because he knew how important it was and is. Kirsten Rapley's been on your board as well. So we're connected in and all in on the Women's Leadership Institute. But let's start by saying, you know, let's talk about where it began. What was the impetus behind, you know, starting this? And then you were asked to be CEO. And then let's talk about a little bit about the projects that you're working on right now.
Okay. Thank you, Abby. Thanks for this opportunity, by the way.
Oh, absolutely. We're thrilled to have you.
Thank you. So 7 years ago, like I said, I was turning 65 and I, you know, the other chapters of my life seemed to be, you know, finishing, which is kind of a natural progression. I was asked to go visit with Scott Anderson. Everybody knows Scott Anderson of Zions Bank, president and CEO, who's a true visionary. I mean, I had done quite a bit of research for Zions Bank, and he, I don't know, fairly or unfairly credits me with some of the successes that they've had because of the qualitative research, but that's neither here nor there. But he basically said, we are struggling to attract and retain people here from out of state because of the perceptions that they have about Utah and women here. It's not a very friendly state for women. And so trying to attract these great tech companies and we're building our economy and all these wonderful things are happening is really being challenged by this perception that a lot of people have. Some of it, I think, valid and some invalid. Mm-hmm. And so they... he said, we would like more women in senior level, more women on boards. We'd like to look at the gender wage gap, and we want more women in politics. And he says, we'll fund you for 2 years, so go figure it out. And it took about 10 minutes. And then I had my next career.
Wow.
You know, and so how many people do that? I don't know, but... I'm surrounded by talented people. I started by understanding the importance of men in accomplishing this. And having been a business person for so many years, I've always been in a man's world. Of course, that's not hard. But in politics, think about this. So half of my board is men and has been, and understanding that. Men are considered allies and advocates of women. And this is, and the other thing I love to do, because I do have a lot of public speaking to large groups and some small groups, and to help men understand that they are not blamed or shamed, that they are part of the solution, and that the only solution will be when we all partner together and tackle this, because, and it is happening. It has just been amazing. So men love the message because we have fun with it. We talk about the challenges that men face working with women and vice versa. We talk about some of the funny things that men and women see differently, like picking shampoo, where women picks shampoo that smells good, that looks good, brand, blah, blah. And man to a man, it says shampoo on the bottle. You know, so, I mean, to have fun like that, we all know those are differences that exist. But why? I like to talk about, because I work with the gender intelligence group, I like to talk about why those differences exist and how we can value that kind of complementary difference that we see. And so it's a very upbeat, it's a very, I think, educational kind of message that we have. And it's there's a lot of inclusion to it.
Yeah.
So... I think we're kind of hit on some things that are really working well.
That's amazing. I want to continue this conversation. You have three sort of focus areas that you're working on with WLI. Let's get into those when we come right back. We're back here with Pat Jones. We're talking about the Women's Leadership Institute that she is the CEO of. And there are amazing things happening with Women's Leadership Institute. And so there, I think, are three kind of big initiatives that you're working on right now. Let's talk about them. I think they're Elevate Her Challenge, which I know Spencer's been a part of, a political development series, and then you were just talking to us about the career development series. So let's kind of break those down and talk about what you're doing.
Sure.
There.
Yes, the Elevate Her Challenge was kind of started right when I was asked to run the Women's Leadership Institute. And, you know, I didn't know where to go. I didn't know where to turn. This is a very big order for us to turn this around, the ship around. So I did some research and found out that Massachusetts had started what they called Getting to More. It was a corporate challenge at that time. And Governor Deval Patrick had started it. And then his the person that followed him, a Republican, Baker, kept going. But they, I don't know where that is right now. But they had done a lot of research on, you know, getting women elevated into corporations and companies, understanding the value. So they'd done quite a bit, and they shared everything with me. And I went back to Boston and spent some time there. And it kind of inspired me to have a product, if you will. And I came back, and it wasn't exactly our mission. So I, you know, tweaked some things. And then one night I had a dream about what to name it. I named it the Elevate Her Challenge. And we've since trademarked that. But we share it with everybody. But the Elevate Her Challenge is a corporate challenge that is not prescriptive. It doesn't cost companies to take it, really. But what it has proven to be is a really important template for companies to follow. And there are six parts of it. Those parts are elevating women to senior level. You can see these mirror our mission when I was first asked to run this, to look at the retention rate internally in companies, to provide mentorship and sponsorship opportunities for women in companies, to put more women on boards, corporate boards, but also encourage them to participate in some of our community boards too. That's good training. To look at the wage gap in Utah, which we know we have a large wage gap. And then finally, to recruit and to support women who want to run for political office. And that's where a lot of companies go, why is that part of it? And then I give them the same speech I just gave you. It's because it's the best leadership development that anybody can be put through is to run for political office. So that's the Elevate Her Challenge. It has been hit out of the ballpark, I have to say, because companies, whether they're large or small, are accepting this challenge. And because it's not prescriptive, we don't ask for numbers, but it's all done internally. And then the Women's Leadership Institute helps them achieve wherever their areas are.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
they're all. Excuse me. So when that is happening, it helps them solidify kind of trust within their organizations. So we have CEOs that are bringing in small groups within their companies and saying to them, we have taken this Elevate Her Challenge. Where are we on each one of these? Where should we head? And how will we measure this internally? And it's starting up brand new conversations like, how do we communicate between men and women? How do we communicate, different generations within our organization? All of these, a lot of issues are just communication issues.
Yeah.
So it opens that up entirely. So we now have, we're hitting almost 300 organizations throughout the state of Utah that have accepted the Elevate Her Challenge. And these are companies that are sending their great women in the pipeline who are mid to senior level, who are interested in developmental leadership.
Okay.
And we had our first one for the year, which is our fourth career development series that'll start today. And it will go for 8 months. And we keep the costs way down, but we have absolutely stunning quality of presenters, okay, not just in the topics, but also those that are presenting. The topics come from our board. Okay. A lot of these are business leaders who say, you know, here's some different leadership needs that we have that we're seeing that we need to develop more. Both men and women, but of course we're dealing with mostly with women.
Okay.
So it has been just beyond my wildest dreams. We also have a political development series, which I started right out of the gate because I was just coming out of the Senate. I knew a lot of the players. I knew they could come and, speak. And really, the format of this has worked so well because we meet once a month for both of these programs from 10:30 to 2. And I knew from focus groups that that's the sweet time for women to be able to attend things like this. You know, not very often, but once a month they can come for half an hour to just network. And then they get some really meaty, instruction. Okay. And it's, you know, it's a cohort. So it's the same women that meet each other. They get to know each other. And this is what's beautiful about our career development series going on right now is because Instructure has been so generous with their bridge program and so forth, that these women still can connect. And we do have a videographer there. And so they can go back, review what they've learned, and then they take it back to their teams and teach their teams. And what does that do? That helps cement what they've learned, but it also helps them be seen as a leader if they're teaching their teams, right? Yeah. So it's all good, and it's all over the state. It's not just Wasatch Front. We're talking everywhere in the state of Utah has access to this.
It's incredible. And I've been noticing that, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think we had kind of a record number of women elected as mayors this year.
Yes.
Isn't that correct? And
yes.
Several of them came through your the program.
Yes.
Right?
They did. And I'm very proud of that. I'm proud of the women that are stepping up because of the very things we talked about earlier. We need women's influence and, of course, men's. We have great men in our state. I never want to be seen as a male basher. I believe in men and women working together and understanding our complementary differences and the value of all kinds of diversity, not just gender diversity, but all kinds of diversity and not even just ethnic diversity, but you're talking different ages, different religions, different socioeconomic backgrounds. All of the research has shown that when you have more diversity, you have better outcomes. You have better products. You have better understanding. You have more peace in the world.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's, what do you think would be your goal, maybe to see what would, in your mind, what does Women's Leadership Institute look like in 10 years?
You know what? I have thought about that, and it's like, I don't want to even look at that because I don't want to limit ourselves.
Okay.
Because I have been blown away by the not just, hey, we're just accepting this, but the absolute all-in-ness of this by not just my board, but, you know, there's the Alex Adema at DPS Skis. Hey, Pat, I bet it's been 10 times he's asked me to come and speak to women and the Outdoor Retailers Association. Yesterday, I presented to the Ski Utah. A couple of weeks ago at the Garf Automotive, all the general managers for Garf Automotives. I mean, these are the opportunities I'm getting is to help men and women understand where we can go from here, how it can help all of us. It's not just business, but it's families. It's understanding why men and women, how we can work better together and our inherent differences.
Yeah.
And, you know, and leveraging those.
Yeah. Do you see that sort of translating into their personal lives as well? I mean, I'm sure if you teach a man at work how to communicate with a woman at work, I'm sure at home it translates.
It absolutely does. But, you know, one of the interesting things we have found in some of the research is that when do you think men start thinking about this issue, about women's leadership? It's when they have daughters.
Mm.
And a lot of research is showing that. And, you know, men want their daughters to have the same opportunities as they have that their sons have. And it kind of goes full circle back to my lack of ability and opportunity to play baseball when I loved it so much. Mm. You know, and think about how much better our world would be if we included the other half of our population.
Yeah. What do you see as barriers? I know we've talked about this a little bit on this podcast before, but is it a cultural thing in Utah that you see some barriers? Is it universal and Utah just gets sort of a weird bad rap? What do you see?
There's clearly some nuances here But I do see it changing. And I see it from the change coming from the younger men, frankly. It's not just women. It's younger men. And when I say younger, everybody's younger than I am. But it's dads that also want to go see their kids play soccer. It's not just the moms that want to take their kids to soccer. The dads want to go to the ballet recital too. They want to go talk to the teachers. They just have not had the flexibility that women have also not had. So this is the change I'm seeing. I think it's really positive. Mm-hmm. My sons-in-law are help with the kids. They cook. I didn't have that. And so I really do see this revolution. I wish I were younger. I'm admitting something new here, but because I love our younger generations, I love how inclusive they are, how non-judgmental they are, that they don't value brands like they did when I was growing up. They want meaning in their life. They want time in their life to be with their families. I admire this.
Yeah.
I think we're in for a great future.
I agree. It was interesting. We're kind of going through this because we have a 15-year-old daughter.
Yes.
And so we're having conversations and we're talking about what her future looks like and what she wants and you know, her passions and what she's excited about. And, you know, we're having a conversation about what she wants to do, you know, in school, what she wants to study. And she said something, and I'm always trying to give her more options. And when she said something about marriage or something, and I said, honey, marriage is not a career path. So let's think about what else you want. So I don't know. What would your advice be? I'm new to this and I don't know what to tell a 15-year-old girl. What would you say? You know, what's your best advice for a young girl?
It doesn't have to be either or. It can be both. But there are seasons in life when it's time to spend more of your time with your young children, maybe, if that's your choice. Mm-hmm. So you don't have to choose either or. I think it's important for women to understand that when they do retire some point in their life and get older, that they have to plan for their retirement. And the Social Security takes your top 30 years average of working. So in a way, women, unless you have other income, and if your husband passes away like mine did a few years ago, you get half of their Social Security. So you're theoretically, if you're not planning ahead and you're staying at home, which is okay for a lot of people, but just understand that your income automatically will be cut in half. And I think a lot of women are unaware of how dangerous that can be. One of the fastest growing populations in poverty is older women.
Really?
And so this is a topic that we should be talking about and preparing women when they're young for.
That's fascinating. Yeah, mm-hmm. That's something I had not thought of myself. I guess I should start earning money.
You're doing just fine.
I know. I think I'm getting $1 a year. That's my salary.
So, I'd say you're underpaid, Abby.
I think it's all good. That's amazing. And this has been a really fun conversation. I do want to end. I did read that you, I know you love sports, and we talked a little bit about the football game, the Rose Bowl, and we were both there. you and I share a passion for watching football and sports. What sports are you playing now?
Oh, okay. So I moved to St. George in May, and I love biking. I have two electric bikes and three regular bikes. They're cruisers, so they're not like too – don't be too overwhelmed. But I love pickleball. Pickleball is social. I can walk out my door and just walk under the street and play pickleball with anybody that shows up. It's all my grandchildren love to play. It's such a fun, quick sport that you can easy to learn.
Yeah. And like you said, cross generations.
Oh,
we've been playing a little bit. I haven't done a ton, but I have noticed with a little bit of chagrin, I think, in St. George, that most of the tennis courts have now been converted to pickleball, which is great because I'm starting to pick up pickle, but my boys all play tennis, and so they were really a little irked about, yeah, being, you know, being having, you know, pickleball replacing their tennis courts.
They'll always have tennis courts. But, you know, there's a lot of seniors everywhere. I think pickleball is something that just about, like you said, every age can play. But it's just fast. It's fast and it's very social. And, you know, you can walk in there alone and have immediate friends and they'll let you play in. I mean, it's just a really a great way, I think, to get exercise, but also to meet people and just enjoy the outdoors.
And so you're still playing golf, though, right?
Oh, I'm a terrible golfer. No, I don't golf enough to be anywhere near good. So I do have golf clubs.
Okay. those are some of those lifetime sports that we can continue to play. Yes. Golf just sucks all your money and you don't get better. So that's...
Golf is actually, I would like to play more golf. And I think when I retire, I will do that.
Yeah. I actually do enjoy it. And anytime we go out and anytime I start keeping score, I start playing badly. So I've just done this thing where I just don't keep my score. I go out and play for fun, and by the end of it, all I remember is my good shots, and we move on from there.
There you go. Yeah, selective memory is really good when you golf, isn't it?
It is. It's that one shot that keeps you coming back.
That's that very one shot. But I did learn that men are, like you said, are not that great of golfers either. So you just keep wanting to go back. It's like this drug that you just kind of want to go back.
True.
Okay. Or even if you hit one shot pretty well, it's like, oh, I get it now. Yeah. And guess what? You don't on the next hole.
Well, yeah, you play around and you're like, I am awesome.
Yeah.
And then you play the next round and you're like, I've never played golf in my life. This is
terrible. I know. It plays with your head. But again, you have to just lower your expectations and just have fun with it.
Yep. That's exactly right. So one more question, though. You said you love reading and you're very well read. What are you reading now?
Well, you wouldn't probably be surprised. Peril.
I don't know that book.
Okay.
Okay.
Go get it.
I'm going to write it down.
Okay.
Okay. I've been reading, again, Jane Eyre. And it's one of my all-time favorites, and I don't usually do a ton of fiction, but I feel like Jane Eyre, I have a 15-year-old daughter who I just think it's so relevant right now. Jane Eyre, knowing who you are, even though, you know, you can come from really tough circumstances or circumstances around you may be really hard, she knew who she was. She had a sense of what she wanted, and she wasn't going to compromise, even though it was really, really hard not to, and felt unloved and lonely for a long time because of that. So it's one of my most favorite books in the whole world. And
everybody can relate to that at some point in their life.
So. Yeah.
Thank you, Abby.
Thank you, Pat. This has been such an incredible experience for me. You are such a leader in the state and have influenced so many women and men in such a powerful way. So thank you for being an example for all of us. And thank you for spending your time with us today.
And tell your husband to come to our board meeting next time.
I will. Thank you.
Just kidding.
If you're interested in getting involved in the Women's Leadership Institute, go to WLIUT.com. Thanks for being a friend.